The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 42nd annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15th through Sunday, July 17th at Cathedral Park in North Portland. Jazz, blues, soul, and Latin musicians will rock the park for 3 days. Tony Coleman, Eddie Martinez, Outer Orbit, and Greater Kind are just a few of the 15 bands performing this year. That's the 42nd annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15th through Sunday, July 17th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My floating like a butterfly, no set of float, sung like a lullaby, brace yourself.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl in Portland. The Big Float X is the 10th anniversary and final iteration of the Big Float, Portland's celebration of the Willamette River. Festivities include a pre-float parade, live music, and after-party. That's the Big Float X on Sunday, July 10th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Tom McCall Bowl, 90 Southwest Nito Parkway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
David D., Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon.
Wanted to bring somebody who's no stranger to our airwaves, Kofi Tahaka out of Houston. He heads up the organization MBUF, National Black United Front. And man, y'all are getting ready to do a big conference talking about bridging the generations and bridging the gaps and, you know, and really laying down an agenda, which I think is important in 2022. One would think that we already have an agenda because there's been so many people that's in the news, so many things that are happening day in and day out. We should obviously be knowledgeable about what steps we need to take and what direction. But when I thought about it, I haven't really seen anything. You know, there's a lot of things that we're reacting to. When I was joking with you when we came on about all the Supreme Court decisions, and the thing that hit me is like, a lot of people should have been locked and loaded because we knew this was coming. You saw this, you know, they was building it up. You saw that this is what they were positioning to do. It was not a question of whether or not they were going to do it. It's like, when are they going to do it, and are we prepared? And here we are. So, you know, you've been in these trenches for a long time. This is the 43rd anniversary or gathering that you all are having. How do you see things, Brother Kofi? And you know, and do we have an agenda? I know you all have an agenda, but has it been able to trickle up to the rest of the masses?
Thank you, David, for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. You know, I think in listening to you, I think there are certain areas of human activity that take place that don't change: education, health, food, clothing, shelter, safety, security, you know. And so when I think about agendas, I said, what was the right excellent Marcus Mosiah Garvey and the UNIA talking about? What was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam and their attempt and what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe? What was the Black Panther Party for self-defense and their 10-point platform? Those are just some of the things that generally speak to these areas of human activity. So the question of agenda or points is one that we always have had, and there are groups and what have you. I think the question is, do we get the critical mass behind independent agendas and not have as many splits, fractures, because, you know, 10 people can have an agenda depending on who they are, but how far is it going to go?
Right.
50 people have it, how far are they going to go? So I think that's one of the challenges that we face. And last, on that point, let me say this, is the historical discontinuity, right, or historical disconnection. If being a activist or organizer, if I'm not a student of our history, then I might think that I have to recreate everything based on today's time, and that's not the case.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned about the Nation of Islam and the Panthers and, you know, Garvey. They all had those platforms of what we need. And they're still basic, you know, food, clothing, shelter, if we could just sum it up, an end to police terrorism, brutality, you know, and basically, you know, enjoying the citizenship, the privileges that citizenship is supposed to provide for everybody who lives here. You know, can we have that? I guess my question is, you know, what have you seen as being the biggest obstacle that has not allowed us to really accomplish just those basic things? I know that everybody comes up every 10 years and they ask these questions, and they may come to these very similar conclusions, but are we really, as a people, arguing and divided over shades of gray? Or is there something else that I'm missing in terms of that? Because I think everybody comes down to the same basic needs that Garvey, you know, articulated, the Panthers and NOI have articulated.
Yeah, in different, you know, there's nuances, obviously, in those
right.
different
well, those,
points.
Those are the shades of gray, though.
Yeah, right. I think, Brother Davey, that from the point of view of the National Black United Front, when we look at it, it's couple of things, couple of variables. One is that our movements, all three of those and many others, were under attack and took assault from the government of the United States to dismantle its leadership, to dismantle individuals and them as formations or organizations. And we shouldn't shortchange what that means when we have the rise of groups and then to withstand that attack that takes place. Mm-hmm. So that's one variable. And then the other variable is, have we been able to pass the baton and have those issues brought forward in a way that's going to reach critical mass?
Okay.
Enough people. Critical mass is just enough sisters and brothers. Not everybody, not the whole 50 million of us that's in the US or whatever they say the number is or whatever, but enough people to push the agenda. And then also you have another variable. You have within this global white supremacist system, it's an empire, and people who are buffers to progress in that agenda, they get favor within this system. And these are people that look like us, black, brown, poor people who help confuse us in putting forth what is good, right, correct, humane. We talk about human rights, basic things for us. And so those buffer type of entities and individuals tend to slow progress as well. We can't leave that out. And we wonder, you know, sometimes, well, why haven't things changed? I think those are some of the variables. I'm not going to tell you that the National Black United Front has all of the answers, but those are some of the things that we have seen in our work over 43 years and looking at our antecedents and some of our contemporary formations.
Kofi, if you could, before I get to the next question, let everybody know about the conference that is taking place this weekend.
Yes.
If I'm giving the particulars so people can tap in.
Yes. This Saturday, July the 9th and Sunday, July the 10th, 43rd Annual National Convention of the National Black United Front be held in Houston, Texas. A lot of the convention will go on at our headquarters on Southmore, 2428 Southmore Boulevard, also at the Shrine of the Black Madonna Pan-African Orthodox Christian Church and the Shape Community Center. Those are some of the locations. People can get the full schedule at nbufconvention2022.eventbrite.com. That's NBUF Convention 2022 at eventbrite.com. You can follow us on Instagram at @nbuff_Houston, Facebook nbuff Houston. You can look us up and you can see the schedule. You can see the fee schedules, where the different activities are taking place throughout the weekend.
Right. Let me also ask you, last one, you had a lot of it online. Will that continue this time, or is it just going to be, you know, I mean, people can hear us in various parts of the country, including Houston, so people there can, you know, get the information and go. But what about, you know, somebody who's in another place? Can they catch any of this online?
I'm glad you asked the question, because this is our first in-person national convention in 2 years, like many other groups. So a lot of it will be in person, but the virtual part will be the national reception on Saturday night, where the guest speaker will be Brother Dr. Greg Carr out of Howard University. Mm-hmm. And it'll be taking place over at the Shrine, and we'll be putting that information out online as well. That's one of the public virtual parts of the convention that has the, what would you say, the hybrid. And when you check that social media in today's time, David, man, things are moving in real time, man. I don't know. We might go live on our Facebook page. We might on IG or something during the weekend. But definitely one virtual part, or for sure, is that Saturday night.
Let everybody know who Greg Carr is.
Yeah.
That's the name we should know.
Yeah. Brother Greg Carr, he is a professor of Africana studies. He teaches up at Howard. University for many decades. He used to be the chair, I think, of their Africana Studies department there. Mm-hmm. But he's on a lot of social media platforms like In Class with Dr. Carr and what have you. Someone who brings a well-informed, well-studied historical perspective to today's contemporary issues. And he's a good brother. We've known him for a long time. I always say there's some people that say, well, he's this and he's that and he's this. I say, yeah, but he's a good brother, first and foremost, you know. But yeah, if people looked him up, you'll see all of these different platforms and some of the online teaching and sharing that he does.
Right, you know, definitely in the forefront of, you know, dealing with one of the new fights that we have for a generation, which is the erasing of history through legislation, you know, the critical race theory laws that have been coming up. This leads me to my next question, Kofi. Originally you out of the DMV, DC area, but you've been in Houston and a fixture there for a very long time.
Yes.
Many of us who live in California and New York and some of the other coastal cities, we become somewhat comfortable and sometimes even a little arrogant. You know, we have lots of organizations here. We seem to be able to move in a way that is unimpeded. We get a lot of support. We get financial support if we're nonprofits. We get a lot of people that if I say, you know, I'm against this Roe v. Wade decision, a lot of people will nod their head, you know. Mm-hmm. If I say racism is bad, you know, and Trump, you know, stinks and January 6th was bad, a lot of people will raise their fist and say, right on, I agree, and we can move. But, you know, and we also fancy ourselves being in the belly of the beast because we live in America.
Yeah.
But things have switched a little bit. You're in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, you know, people call it the third coast. But it's really a belly of a beast in a different way. Mm-hmm. A lot of the legislation that is anti-Black, anti-immigrant, a lot of the reactionary laws that we're seeing come out of there, you know, that's the jump off. I mean, Orange County is where they funded here in the Bay Area, but the jump off and execution of these policies usually takes place in Florida and definitely in Texas. Many of the things that we are concerned about, the authoritarianism that is about to emerge, y'all been dealing with that for a very long time, which leads to this conversation in terms of maybe we need to be shifting and asking different sort of questions and looking at the expertise that people like yourselves and our comrades in Mississippi and, you know, the good folks, you know, the Black media folks in Atlanta, you know, y'all are in these places where the hit is coming straight on. And so I guess, you know, how do you deal with that? What lessons do you think we should be learning in terms of being able to survive and thrive and be self-sufficient? What sort of tactics do we need to be adapting to fight when you have people that if you say some of the things that we get head nods to, you'll get resistance right there. You know, right there, even if you're in Houston, you'll have people go, what do you mean 45 was bad? What do you mean January 6th was bad? What's wrong with Clarence Thomas? That's the guy, you know. We don't have that here in Cali, but you deal with it every day.
Right. Yeah, I think you've been asking me this question over several interviews about Texas, and certainly it gets national and international attention, some of those things that come out of here. It reminds me, Brother Davey, of a story that Kwame Ture told about Dr. King and how he was saying he was going to come, I don't know what, he was going to come to Alabama or Mississippi or something. He was talking to some of the brothers and sisters there, and he said, we're going to come there and we're going to overcome them with love and we're going to do this. And he said, some of the brothers and sisters who lived there, they said, I don't know, Dr. King, these white folks is mean down here. You know, they had a question about whether his strategy could work. But a couple of points. One is the most people, Black people, people of African ancestry in any state in the country live in Texas.
That's true.
the most people, not percentage wise, but in raw numbers. We are in 4 to 5 major cities, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, as the major so-called urban centers here. That's where you're gonna find us. And you're not necessarily within the tight urban communities gonna run into as much as we might see on TV, the resistance that you spoke about. But it's close. I'm not saying his name right in here, it's in here too, but it's real close, that far, far right wing kind of thought and what have you. It ain't nothing but a minute away if it's not already in those urban centers. You know, so how we go about organizing, how would it be different from being in Oakland or being in New York or being in LA? That's a very, very interesting question. One thing is density of population, where things are very spread out here. You know, if you stand on a street corner or you on a block or wherever it is, you know, that you're doing work, it's not the traffic of people, it's not the concentration and density. So that plays a role in it. I don't know how much the principles of things change though, Brother David, when we're talking about those basics, food, clothing, shelter, safety, security issues that exist. I don't think the principles are necessarily changed, but the political spectrum definitely is different. Somebody y'all might call a sellout in Oakland, right? Might be considered a progressive in some corners in Houston.
Right.
Because of the way the political spectrum is. So we have to fight through some of that. But you know, with heavy oppression comes heavy resistance. We got some strong, you know, when you have people in your face that are no nonsense and telling you straight up, we don't give a damn about you. They got guns and flags and all kind of stuff. Then that puts you in a certain self-defense and resistance mind state in and of itself too.
But I see in these places when I've been down there, a lot of self-determination and focus completely on the community. Mm-hmm. It's not even an illusion. There ain't nobody trying to convince the minds of somebody who would drive around in the pickup truck with the flag. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I've been down there, a lot of us have flags and pickup trucks ourselves.
Right.
You know, which people, right, you know, seem to forget. You know, we'll have the red, black, and green flag, and mm-hmm. there is a strength there. But it's something that I don't know if it translates. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes we might look and say, oh, poor Kofi and, you know, and NBUS, they're down there in Texas, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, poor, you know, folks in Jackson, Mississippi and Cooperation Jackson. I don't know, you know, it's rough down there, but in underestimating the fact that y'all are in that storm and know how to survive it. And I guess, you know, I come back to the question is, I don't know if we necessarily know how to survive it in these other places. You know, do we know how to till the land? Do we know how to farm? Do we know how to, you know, do some things that I think folks in other, you know, all throughout the South have been forced to do?
Many of us, I'm not going to say all of us, because there's people right here in our situations who are very confused, right? But a lot of us are not confused because this is, you know, like in your face type of thing. And if you're confused, it's because maybe we don't have that basic political, historical, cultural, spiritual education I was talking about to really totally understand what it is that's happening. And that's a part of organizers and activists' job to get that information out so that we have clarity. I mean, this is a state of James Byrd, Sandra Bland, Shaka Sankofa, Gary Graham. These are high profile. And of course, just like every other state, there's a list that never makes it out of the state of attacks of individuals, attacks on communities and institutions. So, you know, it's a hardcore reality, man. I don't know what a good analogy would be. We're under no illusion, because, you know, I've been throughout the country and everything and seen a lot of stuff. I would say this, though. hey, we the same wherever we go, right? We might dress a little different. We might talk a little different. The landscape might be a little different. The political, historical, cultural, and spiritual education might be at a different level for a certain number of people. Right. So, you know, we use a lot of the same strategies. Yep. I don't know what it's like. See, I've been to Jasper, Texas. I've seen the Klan straight up many times face to white supremacist terrorist groups who some of these politicians are dog whistling, and not even dog whistling to here in Texas, are actually playing to their base, right? Yeah. So, you know, hell, I might go to the Walmart and see that. They right. know not to mess with me, and I ain't gonna mess with them unless they bring something, I guess is what I'm trying to say, Brother David.
Yeah. I hear that. I guess, you know, I think it's always important that we kind of connect those dots to see how everything is, because you said something earlier about, which I think went over people's heads, but, you know, there's a tendency to reinvent the wheel. And even with social media and, you know, and our being able to be connected, we're also separated because of algorithms and all that. And so, you know, we think we know what's going on in another city. It may not know. For example, I just posted an article earlier today with the cops in New York saying the exact same thing the cops in Oakland are saying. Nobody likes us. We don't have enough people. We have mass resignations going on. Then I had to pull up another article, and they're saying the same exact thing in Minneapolis. And they're saying the same exact thing in Georgia, right? And unless you're intentional about connecting those dots, you may think in your own place, like, it's only happening in our city. And so that's one way of looking at it, but also the type of strategies and challenges and how people overcome, I think it's important to see that as well. That, you know, like you all are holding it down in Texas. You know, it's a fight just like it is in any other place. And, you know, maybe we can share strategies and resources and be intentional about connecting, but we should also be aware, you know, that there are folks on the ground and understand the language in which it's spoken, well, that's culturally and politically.
That's a basic principle of organizing. I'm not, when I say
I'm saying some wherever, people forget that a lot.
Wherever we go, we're coming to learn too. Right. Something you're doing may be a very helpful to replicate, and we're coming to or share.
Right.
And that's what history, learning from history and learning, you go into a particular place, you wanna, that's some of the arguments that took place in that 60s era about strategies of organizing, where you kind of swoop in a single charismatic leadership, right? Versus right. working with the people that are there and helping and supporting and bringing out Fannie Lou Hamer, right? Yeah. The servant ship that's already there. So that is definitely a mindset, David. And like you said, in today's world, you can get a lot of stuff online. You can get a lot of stuff through social media. And that's one of the things about the National Convention too, is we really like being in person is very important, because everything ain't for social media. Everything ain't for this interview that we talk about. All of the, you know, the things that we might share, the things we need to see each other. We need to social, we need to touch each other. We need to feel each other. And that's been my experience traveling throughout this country. I want to learn everything I can about the place where I am, because there are definitely nuances and strengths, but there are far more similarities in our communities than there are differences from our perspective.
Real talk, we're all facing the beast. Maybe just different sides of the beast.
Right.
You know, right now, from my perspective, Texas because, is looking
hey,
at
let the, me throw this in, David, yeah. because some people will come here, real talk, and I've seen it over the years, right? People, real strong sisters and brothers who have serious track records, sometimes, and not all of them, will come here and say, y'all slow, or have a feeling, or y'all backward, or something, because it's not moving, or the rhetoric is not the thing, or certain things are not, you know, in place that you may see in place in some of those places. But we believe in strength-based organizing. And it's like, wait a minute, let me tell you a little bit about the history of the place that you're in.
Yeah.
Right? let me little tell you about these Africans here who been owning and running their own land and farms for 150 years, self-determination, or who bought the park, Emancipation Park, 100 and some years ago after Juneteenth. Or let me tell you about some of these institutions that people will see at the National Convention. So, you know, let's learn from each other and never, as we say, never look down on the people, always look up to the people, always look up to the people.
That is, that are, those are wise words to live by.
Yes, sir.
We can always learn, even if the guy's sleeping on the street in the tent.
That's right.
I always tell people, if there's an earthquake tomorrow and the power goes out, that guy who's sleeping on the corner in the tent can tell you how to survive when the lights are out.
Check that.
You know, so you better, better treat them with the same love and compassion as you do everybody else, because we can all learn from each other. Again, Kofi Tahaka, brother, if you can just tell people how to tap in for this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be on that Eventbrite NBUF Convention 2022. That eventbrite.com, Facebook, MBUF Houston, IG, MBUF underscore Houston, and you can keep abreast of everything. You can see the whole schedule of what's going on. And we are aware, as we said, our certain levels of dependency and self-determination. And hell, Davey, if all of that stuff I named go down, we might have to talk through a string in a can, brother.
A string in a can or a drum. There you go. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Later. Ha! Hey, hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, hard north, south, radio, conectados. Man. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs. One love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from this hard knock, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard stop.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I want to talk about an event that is coming up actually tomorrow, Friday. It is called Asians Are Funny. It's a comedy show to benefit the AAPI communities across the country. In particular, the nonprofit Asians Are Strong and Stand With Asians, those are the two nonprofits. And joining us to bring the heat, to bring the funny, is Joying Summers. And how are you this afternoon?
Feeling great. Actually, I had a film, that feature film. I was filming all night last night, and I just got home at 6 a.m. I was planning on sleep, but it's not happening because there's not enough time. So I packed, and I got in my Uber and on my way to San Francisco.
What's funny is, for people who don't know or not familiar, you have a very popular routine where you're in an Uber. So when I picked up and you said you were in an Uber, I thought you were gonna be doing your routine. You wanna explain to people what that routine is about for folks who don't know?
Yes, so my sketch Uber Karen is basically, I wanted to show the world, especially so people can, because Uber Karen, she's very bitter, she hates everybody, and she's not educated, she's unhappy, and she doesn't like anybody. I want people to see racism in a comedic way, that racism, you know, how stupid it sounds and looks. Because you and I, we are not white, and people say things to us all the time. It's very low-key racist. Mm-hmm. And we can hear it. but people are more privileged if they are white. It's harder for them to understand that why it's racist, you know? You know, just like, for example, like, I got a job and people are like, oh, that's pretty good for you. You're like, as an Asian woman, to get that kind of job. They didn't think that's racist. So even though I'm an Asian woman, as an Uber driver, I say stupid things and I say racist things. People see how ridiculous that sounds from a person right. of color. Because we there's nothing we can say that's racist against people with privilege. But because I look Asian, I would say things that white people say to people. And then they were like, oh my God, that sounds ridiculous. So they understand the things they are doing that is not okay. In a funny way, I want to educate people that I don't think we're not born racist. You know, we were born equal. We love everybody, and we were taught to be racist. You right. see, like little kids in school in all colors, they love each other. They don't see color. They just don't. And then we were taught to be racist. And then most people, I think, they are racist because they never traveled. They don't have passport. They never left their hometown. And that's why they don't like other people, because they are not educated. So Uber Karen is stupid and silly, but it really makes people think, wow, this thing is funny. Oh my God, how would you say that? I'm like, I hear that all day.
So you're just reflecting that back. I like the routine that you did with the rich woman. That's where it really shows up, you know, for people who go online. Why did you pick the name Karen Ho to be the... Uber driver? There's a whole routine around the name Karen Ho. Yeah.
Yes. So I also want to normalize Chinese names, because, you know, people make fun of Chinese name like Ping Ping. They think it's so stupid. Like Ho, that, oh my, your name is Ho. That's so stupid. It's only stupid to English speakers. You think it's stupid. But American names, because I did a name roasting on my TikTok. Has millions of views. Every video has it, because English name sounds stupid to us, too, like a you know, Becky or like Shelby. Shelby in Chinese sounds like a Shabby, which is stupid. And then when I hear Shelby, I don't laugh. It's like, you have a silly name. People hear a girl has a name who's Ho. It's like, oh my God, are you a Ho? Is your name? Why would your parents do that to you? So because the Americans think the world turning around the. In, like, they are the center of the world. They think we all only speak English, and all the words, the meaning only means something when it's in English. But sometimes, you know, there's other cultures that we should respect. So I just want to use Karen as the classic Karen right now, that we know the person, the white lady with short hair who complains about everything. And whenever the Karen see a black person, we do call the cop, and that kind of character. But then the last name is Ho. Is a Chinese last name that's really silly, but I want to make it less silly, because it's the name, you know. It's not a whore. Just like I would say, Becky sounds like a Baiji, which is a white whore. Like if a girl's name is Becky, it means white whore. I don't tell you your name is stupid. It sounds like a white whore, because they don't relate to Chinese. We're like, I don't know it's Chinese. Same here. In English, you know, it's just one language. It's not the world, just the whole world only speak English. The meaning of English is so much more important than all other languages. It's just not true.
We're talking with Joyene Summers. She is headlining an event that is taking place tomorrow, actually, in San Francisco. It is called Asians Are Funny, and it's a comedy show to benefit a number of nonprofits. The address is 1865 Post Street in San Francisco, and it starts at 9:30, and you can get more information at the website Asians Are Funny. Let me ask you this, Joyene. This benefit, it was really to highlight the anti-Asian hatred that's been displayed by many in this country. Are your routines, especially the Uber one that has really put you on the map in a big way, was that really a reaction to the attacks that were coming on so many Asians? And, you know, and since you're originally coming out of China, do you see that anti-Asian hatred? Is that something that you noticed just in the U.S., or is it something that has kind of been global?
I think U.S. is pretty bad. It happens in Europe and Australia and other part of the world. But in US, it's extremely bad. I think has a lot to do with the Trump presidency, with all those Kung Flu and the Wuhan lab, all kind of things that pin against the Chinese American. And in America, a lot of people who are Trump supporters or they are not educated, and they think anybody who's, I mean, they would tell a Japanese person, go back to China. Mm-hmm. Go back to China, go back to Wuhan. That person like, I'm Japanese, like, I don't care. Like, what kind of Chinese is? It's so absurd and it's obnoxious. I think Trump presidency really poisoned Americans' mind, increased the Asian hate during the pandemic, because it's not new. The Asian hate movement is not new. I mean, in the 1800s, there's Exclusion Act towards Chinese Americans that did not allow Chinese women to come to America because they don't want the Chinese wife would come to meet their husband who's working on the railway, and they would have children and stay in America. And same with the Japanese, you know, after the World War II, they mm-hmm. were transferred into those camps that is very inhumane. But Asians, we don't talk so much about it because we were taught to just keep our heads down and work hard to prove our value. But now it's no longer the time. It's all those violence and hate crimes against the Asian Americans just because we look Asian. I was in New York and I was in a subway. I post a photo of me in the subway. I just say that I belong here. Something like that. And some lady commented on my video and said that if you belong here as much as you think you do, why do you have those tiny eyes? Go back to your country.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So I post, I'm like, honey, listen, the only person who belonged to America at the very beginning, that they really, really do belong to America, are the Native Americans. They have small eyes just like me. So if we are going back to our countries, you should go first. Because you don't look like Native Americans. I look like.
Let me ask you this. Do you think things have improved, you know, much since Trump? Because it seems like there is a geopolitical scenario where you have people like Joe Biden, who is supposed to be the alternative to Trump, but, you know, he's kind of looking at scapegoating China as well. And is that a fair scapegoating in terms of economics and policies as a country? But it obviously it trickles down to people who are of Chinese descent. So has this new administration kind of eased some of those concerns of anti-Asian hatred?
I think Biden is doing a good job because we have a half black, half Asian vice president who's a female, and they did add a lot of educational lessons in the school system about like Asian museum and all those things about Asian culture. I think they are doing a good job, but China and America is not in really great term right now. That it's pretty cold right now, and it's very competitive, that's China and America. And I think there's a lot of tension between China and America. And obviously Chinese has been making a lot of money from America with like a lot of business. And people got really, I think they are really, they're threatened by Chinese presence that's larger than ever and bigger than ever. And then I go to a place and people wouldn't like me because I'm Chinese, because they think I came here to steal their jobs. One of the girls who was in Starbucks, she's like, you guys just come here and steal our jobs. I'm like, honey, I'm not gonna steal a job at Starbucks. Don't worry. Your job is safe, honey.
I hear you. Let me ask you this. You know, in your bio, it says dumpster baby. What is that about? Is that just a thing to capture attention, or is there any truth to this dumpster baby story that I've seen you talk about and is in your bio? What's the story behind that?
It was hard for me to talk about that when I was just starting my comedy career, it's just too deep and too dark to talk about it, too traumatic, and it's impossible to make it funny before you get over it. I think eventually at one point I got over it because my mother and I were really reconnected after I had children, after I had my babies. My mother and I, we were not in good terms because of my life, and I was a girl and they didn't want me. And then after I had children, I really forgive my mom, and I really got to this important part of having a really good relationship with my mother helped me to heal, to be able to talk about it. So I was born in 1990, certainly in the village, I mean, all over China is enforced the one child policy. So you can only have one child. Traditional Chinese family would like the child to be a boy. And if it's a girl, it's likely they are going to give the girl away to the relatives, or they're going to just get rid of the baby.
Wow.
So they can have no baby. They can have a second one, hopefully it's a boy. It happens a lot in the rural areas. They didn't want me, you know, because I was a girl. But my mother, they won't get rid of me. But my mother just, she regretted. She said, no, I'm keeping her. So my father was taking me, but then my mom's like, no, I'm keeping her. But the sad thing is that whenever I don't do well in school, I have a scar here, like little one. And it's like when I get A minus in school, in my math class, my mother threw a dictionary on my forehead. She goes, I did not bring you back to the dumpster for A minus. You know, like it's really tough in China, and the love is very tough. And I actually, you know, I appreciate the tough love that my mom gave me, and she made me very, very strong. And so I think what hurt me the most is not that they almost got rid of me, but is that I was constantly reminded that I wasn't wanted. Whenever I don't behave, that I would hear that I'm lucky to be alive, and they didn't want me, and they kept me. I have to be better. I have to do better in school. I have to behave, and that hurt more than
right.
That.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm glad that you're on a path to healing and getting the reconciliation that you talked about. Let me ask you this. When I saw the headline for the show, Asians Are Funny, immediately what came to mind was seeing the plethora of comedy specials that are featuring a number of Asian comics that are, you know, kind of getting their own Netflix, you know, thing. It might be Michael Yoy and Joy. I'm going to mess up everybody's name. Alvina Wong, I believe, or not Alvina Wong, that's an activist here. But there's a number of you know, Asian comedians that are kind of making their name now. How do you feel about that? Do you connect with them? Will you do any collaborations in the future? Or, you know, what's the landscape like from your standpoint as a comedian?
I think as a female Asian comedian, I've been constantly compared to Margaret Cho and Ali Wong.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think those two ladies really are the trailblazers for Asian women in comedy in America, in the world. And a lot of times people expect me to do the similar things they do because they think that's the only way for me to make it. But it's impossible for me to do it because we actually have very, very different lives. And Margaret Cho, I think both Ali Wong and Margaret Cho are from San Francisco.
Yeah.
They were born in America, and they are born in America. They are Americans. They are Asian girls, but they are Americans. Their experiences are Asian American experiences in America. And both of them are very revolutionary, and I admire them deeply. And there's a connection between me and Ali Wong that kind of started my comedy career from John Singleton, the director, the late director.
Oh, I didn't realize both of you started through John Singleton?
John Singleton convinced me to do stand-up.
Really? What was that like? Where did you meet him? How did you all connect that way? May he rest in peace.
I started with acting. I trained with Howard Fine for many, many years. I worked very hard on my acting craft, and I I've been getting close to get a role, but I eventually cannot get a role because of my accent. And it's harder for me to get rid of my accent, like Salma Hayek, you know, like Sofia Vergara. I mean, she has an accent, you know. I mean, you can't have any role until you are very famous. He wants you to play like a certain role, but then you can't be very famous if you don't have any role. I auditioned for this TV show called The Rebel. It's a police drama centered with this black girl. Her name is Rebel. She's a police woman, and a police woman. And she has a sidekick. It's an Asian girl. The story is set in Oakland, so in San Francisco, actually. So this Asian girl would be somebody like a Margaret Cho or Ali Wong, because she's born in Oakland. She has this Oakland accent. She's like, you know, she's like a little, I would say, like a Awkwafina, like this Asian girl with this sassy accent, who has tattoos, who's cool, who's I auditioned and they liked me, but they and I remember I forgot a line in the audition room. I just did some improv and tell some jokes, and the whole room laughed so hard, and John Singleton stood up and he said that you should be doing stand-up comedy, you are very talented. I asked him, what is stand-up comedy? He took his phone out, he walks to me, and he showed me a clip of Ali Wong on YouTube. He said that you can do that. You'll be very funny if you really invest in going to open mics and develop yourself. You are talented. I was thinking, do I have a role now? Like, am I booked a job? He said, no, I can't book you because you are not convincing as you are born in San Francisco.
So you didn't get the role, but he launched you onto the comedy thing.
Yeah, and he asked my phone number. I gave him phone number. He texted me 2 weeks later. He asked me, did you go to your first open mic?
Wow.
And what was... No. He said, you should go. You should go, girl. I said, what's the point? I can't even get a job auditioning. I've been auditioning for like 4 years. You know, it's not happening for me. I don't think it's going to happen for me. There's no way I can do what Ali Wong does. This is way harder than acting. He said, it is, but you can do it. And once you make it in comedy, you can always go back to acting when you are important, because you have to fight for yourself. And I didn't really do it until I came to my first comedy show, watched a cinema comedy show, and then I'm like, I'll do my first open mic. And I bombed very hard. I text John, I said, John, I bombed. It was very bad. And he said, keep going. You are bored with this. I don't know why he was convinced that I would be so great at it. And then I did it, and then I opened my own comedy club, because I started doing it, I realized there's not enough stage time. So I bought a little club in Amaro's in Hollywood, so I can go on stage 10 hours a day. I worked very, very hard for my craft. I've been doing this only like 2.5 years, less than 3, but I had stage time like people who had 10 years. So John Singleton was gonna have lunch with me and talk to me about my stuff. And we never had lunch. He passed away, had a stroke. And after that, I really just, I decided to pursue this wholeheartedly with everything I have. I did do it. Everything I have, I pursue comedy. Because I just saw life is so hard and it's so short. If John Singleton think I can do it, I can do it. Because he has no agenda. He's just this older man who is very successful, who has changed the Black Hollywood forever, who has discovered many, many stars that, and he didn't want to hit on me, he didn't want anything from me. He just still wanted to help me find my destiny. And I remember when I got passed at the paid regular at the Love Factory, Ali Wong just got her new special out. So on the marquee, there's Ali Wong and there's me, all photo next to each other. I took a photo and I cried. I look in the sky, I'm like, I can see John Singleton saw that. He'll be like, I told you.
Congratulations on that.
He was like this, I told you.
So, Joylene, as we are wrapping up, what can people expect tomorrow, you know, at the show that you're doing to benefit? What do you want our audience to know, you know, to be prepared for when they come see you?
I think tomorrow it will be comedy. It won't be a TED Talk, because I also going to talk a lot about being Asian, being an Asian woman, and why Asian women are not exotic, why Asian men don't have small business, that's all of them have small business, that's stupid stereotype, and why that we all love Bruce Lee. If you think about that, we are not, even, you know, 40 years ago, all the black men, they have Bruce Lee in their house, white boys, all of them. They don't see Bruce Lee as this yellow person who is weird, who is this, that. They just see their idol. We are not racist. We are taught to be racist. And, you know, like Muhammad Ali, like Bruce Lee, they are all those, the most iconic heroes of our generation. And we all love them. We love them way before 2022.
Right.
And why are we going backwards at 2022, that when we see Asian men, we think they should go by the channel, we should punch them. We see Asian women, we should shoot them because they are exotic, they are a fetish. I just believe in humanity, and I hate the politics. Also, I'll talk about being the one survivor of a one-child policy, and how I view the overturn of Roe versus Wade, and how I connect two together. I would be very political, but very entertaining and unapologetic. And I think I'll have a very strong stand that I stand. I don't. And also, I feel like the media and society is trying to turn minority communities against each other, and I think it's very stupid.
Right.
And I don't like they are turning black and Asians against each other. They are turning you know, Latinas and blacks and Asians against each other, and it's really stupid. And all of the media, they are from people, corporate, who can benefit from those kind of propagandas. You know, it's not really what people are.
Right. No, real talk, and I appreciate that. Joylene Summers is our guest. We're going to wrap up and let you know tomorrow, Friday, 9:30. At 1865 Post Street in San Francisco, the benefit, Asians Are Funny. It's a comedy show, and Joylene, our guest, just explained some of the things that she's going to be tackling. And it's to benefit a couple of strong organizations, which include Asians Are Strong and Stand With Asians, and both have been very active and effective in pushing back on anti-Asian hate and violence. So, Joylene, we appreciate you taking time out this afternoon, joining us on Hard Knock Radio. As you are in an Uber, and if you haven't seen her routine on Uber, go see it. So when I saw her get in and she was like, I'm in an Uber, I was like, oh, wow. I thought I was going to be in one of the TikTok videos. I thought maybe I was going to be featured. But it's good to have you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and I love your style. I love the redhead.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, there very you go. Cool.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN, at it again. Simon, daddy man. Chris, Juwan, Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy, though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Now Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.